And welcome to Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. I'm your host, Don Kimble. Pleasure to have you along today. We're recording from a remote location we call the Sacred Feather Studios. And we're very proud and pleased to be on KURU-FM 89.1 Silver City, New Mexico, or GMCR.org. And now let's go to our interview with American National Security and Human Rights Attorney, Jesslyn Raddick. With us today is Jesslyn Raddick. She's an author, she's an activist, national security and human rights attorney. She's coming to us from Washington, D.C. And she is a 1995 graduate of Yale Law School. And she then went to work for the Department of Justice as a honors program attorney. 2001, she was involved with the John Walker Lynn case. 2002, she left the Department of Justice when she blew the whistle and the Justice Department had a smear campaign against her. 2004, she sued the Department of Justice for violating the Privacy Act. She has defended NSA whistleblowers Thomas Drake, Edward Snowden. Her book is Traitor, the Whistleblower and the quote-unquote American Taliban. She's been featured in the documentary Silenced. Her writings have appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, The Guardian, The Nation. She's appeared on NPR, Al Jazeera, PBS, CNN, and BBC. Notable awards include the 2012 Hugh Hefner First Amendment Award, the Sam Adams Award, and the Woodrow Wilson Visiting Fellow. Currently, she is the Director of National Security and Human Rights at Expose Facts, Whistleblower and Source Protection Program. Jess, thanks for being on Friendly Fire.
Glad to.
Now, currently, you are defending Daniel Hale, the latest person that's been victimized, prosecuted under the 1917 Espionage Act by the United States Department of Justice, is using this act, which was meant for spies, and they've turned it around, and they are prosecuting whistleblowers with this. You were quoted as saying earlier, that using the Espionage Act has everything to do with chilling speech and journalism and nothing to do with justice.
That's correct. It's an antiquated law that has been wielded uniquely against whistleblowers. And that, I mean, the first person was Daniel Ellsberg, and that was in the 1970s. And then the law lay dormant for, half a century, almost half a century, and then was resurrected under the Obama administration and has now been used by Obama and Trump, and unfortunately now Biden, to go after leaks to the media that were really disclosing some of the U.S.'s darkest secrets in terms of torture, secret surveillance, war crimes, and drone assassination
programs, right? Don't you find it interesting that President Obama was a constitutional attorney, but yet under his administration resurrected, as you said, this 1917 Whistleblower Act, which was originally used to prosecute spies and has been used to, again, silence or attempt to silence folks from exposing government corruption, war crimes, things of that nature. What's your
take
on
Obama,
that?
Not only as a constitutional scholar, that drove disappointment in Obama, but he ran on a platform of transparency and openness, and literally had in his platform supporting whistleblowers who, and he did the opposite. He led the most vicious campaign against them using this very draconian, heavy-handed law. And it was just a record number of people being prosecuted for media leaks under the Espionage Act. It was like the exact opposite of what he said. And I think by the end of his terms, I think he realized, enough people had pointed out the hypocrisy and the problems with doing this.
The John Walker Lynn case, let's talk a little bit about that, and then we'll move forward from there. So by all accounts, you were a stellar student at Brown and at Yale. You had three majors. You graduated with honors with all of them. And then you went to the Justice Department. Tell us about the honors. What is an honors program attorney? And what happened at Justice with John Walker Lynn?
So the department uses to hire new attorneys, and it's very selective. So, I mean, I was very, very happy to do that. I had always wanted to work for the Justice Department and saw the government as wearing the white hat and fighting for, you know, the people.
Justice in the American way, yep.
Right, exactly. And I worked for a number of years there without incident. Everything was fine. And then I happened to be working in the ethics office and was the attorney on call when they captured John Walker Lind, who was ended up becoming the first terrorism prosecution after 9/11. And so it was really like a small case, but it was blown up in the media and became, it was like going after a minnow with a sledgehammer. The government was considering the death penalty at one point. He had been subject to torture. As the ethics advisor, I had said, you can't use the fruits of an interrogation when this guy was being tortured. Like, you can't use that in a criminal prosecution. And the government turned around and did exactly that. And eventually that became public, how he was tortured and how he was denied his Miranda rights and how he was denied medical care. I mean, basic, like, human rights stuff and basic legal precedent. I mean, everyone can cite Miranda if you watch Law and Order, and he was denied these very basic things. Once that became public, the case crashed and he pled guilty to two minor administrative infractions and recently was released from prison.
That's good. He was released from prison. And just for folks who maybe don't know about the case,
he was just over there, he was studying religion. There, he had converted to being Muslim, and he went over as part of his studies. Okay. And he believed everyone needed to engage in jihad, but he had a very kind of naive understanding of what that was, and ended up embroiled in an uprising at a prison in Mazar-e-Sharif, and that uprising ended up killing Johnny Michael Spann. Anyway, he ended up being kind of a scapegoat. He was more of like a flunky. His Arabic skills were really bad. He was naive. He went over, got involved in this thing that was much bigger than he was. But in the hysteria right after 9/11, everyone wanted a bad guy. And unfortunately, he was very naive and was in the wrong place at the wrong time and made a number of poor choices. So he was going to be the poster child for, hey, not only are we going to put a terrorist on trial, but even worse, he's an American. And so that became kind of he was like the poster child for how we were fighting the war on crime. And he was ahead, you know, to bring back for the government saying, you know, he was like the worst of the worst and had consorted with Osama bin Laden and all this other stuff. And it was more about the government trying to prove that someone would pay for 9/11, though he had nothing to do with that.
Similar to Saddam Hussein, who had really nothing to do with 9/11. You did not work as an attorney defending John Walker Lynn, but you blew the whistle on DOJ and the FBI, who, one, you already mentioned that they didn't read him as Miranda rights, similar to what happened to somebody that we'll talk about in a little bit here, Reality L. Winner. And then Justice smeared you and you left. And what happened after that?
Basically, yeah, I resigned. And they then, like, oh, it was everything. They tried to get me fired from my job at a private law firm. they unleashed a smear campaign in which they called me a traitor and a turncoat and a terrorist sympathizer in a New York Times article. Mm-hmm. They placed me under criminal investigation, though they never told me for what. They referred me to the state bars in which I'm licensed as an attorney, and they put me on the no-fly list.
Hopefully you've been removed from the no-fly list.
The criminal case has been dropped with no charges being brought. The bar cases have been dropped, and yes, I am able to fly.
So you have a little bit of experience in feeling what it's like for you to be smeared and for the government to come after you, unjustly so, saying these things about you, and how tough it must have been for you and your family. And so you have now, after that, you gravitated to, okay, I know what it's like to be a whistleblower. I know this feeling, and I'm going to now defend people who have been charged and people who have been charged on the 1917 Espionage Act. You've really got your work cut out for you because, like you said earlier, using the Espionage Act against whistleblowers has everything to do with chilling speech and journalism and nothing to do with justice. So talk a little bit about Thomas Drake and Edward Snowden, NSA whistleblowers.
Tom Drake's case, he was like the first person in decades and decades since Dan Ellsberg, the first person in modern, very modern history to be charged under the Espionage Act. And they couldn't have picked a worse case because he was charged with leaking what they claimed to be classified information and made him out to be this really bad guy when, in point of fact, he's like the model whistleblower. He had gone through every conceivable internal channel available to him at NSA to complain about surveillance programs that were violating Americans' rights. He had gone up the chain of command. He had gone to both the House and Senate in the Congress to the Intel committees. So he's going to all these different proper mechanisms for blowing the whistle. And not only did they fail to redress his grievances, they turned around and said, "You're the target. Like the person who raised the problem is the problem," and ended up referring him for criminal investigation and recommended that charges be brought against him and participated in all of this. And it ended up being a big nothing burger because he had not done anything wrong. He had given unclassified information to the media, which everyone's allowed to do under the First Amendment. But unfortunately, when you are facing the Espionage Act and charges that could put you away for life, it's an uphill battle.
It's really beyond the pale the way that the government has gone after whistleblowers, but it's okay for top intelligence officials to lie before congressional committees. Everybody remembers James Clapper before a Senate investigative committee was directly asked, "Does the NSA spy on the American people?" And Clapper, you could just tell with his body language, he put his head down, he was kind of wiping his brow and then shaking his head, and he said no, which is a lie. He lied under oath to a Senate committee, and yet nothing happened. And then here's people who, like Thomas Drake, Ed Snowden, Reality, L. Winner, John Kiriakou, Daniel, and now Daniel Hale, who are true patriots trying to protect America from many different things that could hurt the country, but yet the Justice Department completely turns around what they've done and vilifies them and smears them and uses a law that prevents, talk about the 1917 Espionage Act, prevents defendants from using I guess you could call it a necessity of defense. It was necessary for me to break this law in order to do a greater good. Talk about that a little bit, please.
Right. The problem with the Espionage Act is it is a strict liability law. So unlike pretty much every other crime where you can talk about your intent, where you can say, yeah, I robbed the bank, but I was trying to get money to buy bread for my, you know, my wife and my baby or whatever. Any other crime, you normally get to say, yes, I was speeding, but my wife was in labor, whatever. Like normally you get to talk about your intent, but with the Espionage Act, you're not allowed to. So it doesn't matter if a defendant divulged information to the enemy for profit or for revenge, or whether they divulged information to the press to inform the people about what their government was doing in secret. None of that gets to be heard by the jury during the trial phase. Technically, you can raise it at sentencing, but that presupposes that you've already been found guilty. Not being able to talk about your good intentions or why you made this very difficult choice is a huge impediment. The government knows that, you know, and that's why they're using this antiquated law. It also, I mean, there's some dozen other laws that can be used to prosecute unauthorized disclosures of classified information, but the government uses the Espionage Act because it is so draconian and Kafkaesque. You know, a lot of the information and evidence cannot be heard or discussed in public. Even at trial, code words are used for regular everyday words like fiber optic. You know, they'll have a code word for that because they claim it's classified. It's really this land of the strange. It makes it nearly impossible to defend yourself. Not only really, does it not matter what committed the crime, but like, you're not allowed to say certain words. You're not allowed to say why you did what you did. It's either you made the disclosure or you're not. And if you did, you're guilty.
It's kind of like a legitimized lawlessness now, because the defendant has absolutely no hope of ever getting through to the judge. And of course, well, there's not going to be a jury because the defendants don't dare take it to trial. So they're all going to plead. But even the attorneys for the defendants who are charged on the Whistleblowers Act have all sorts of caveats put upon them. They have to meet in secret. They can't talk to each other on the phone. I mean, it's absolutely a kabuki theater trying to get any justice. So speak to that, please.
Yeah, the constraints on the attorneys, you're only allowed to meet in a government facility called a SCIF, a Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility. Because this stuff is so super secret. When you're meeting there, you're not allowed to take notes and you're not allowed to bring anything or recording notes, nothing out with you. So this really hampers any kind of normal lawyering activity that you engage in with a client. I mean, most people, I think, have no idea that these are the kind of constraints in these trials, and that you hit on something earlier. I mean, yes, that is why people plead out in these cases. They are usually young people facing the rest of their life in jail. Every Espionage Act count carries a 10-year penalty, as opposed to other laws for unauthorized disclosure that carry a year or two. It carries 10 years per count. And so Reality and Tom Drake and John Kiriakou and Jeffrey Sterling and Terry Arbery and all the people who've had to face this, you know, literally they didn't have much of a choice but to plead guilty if they wanted to ever have a life again. But then they're convicted of this very scary sounding crime when in reality, you know, it's not, they didn't commit any violent crime. They only divulged secrets that happen to overlap with government illegal conduct. So it's really a tragedy. And crazy that it's been allowed to go on for this long. There have been some attempts by Congress to kind of tinker with the law and fix it, but it's a bad law. It's like you're trying to make a bad law a little better. And I think ultimately it should just be repealed, or the government should just like act in good faith and start using laws that were actually meant to go after unauthorized disclosures of information. But one of the things it tries to do in these trials is prevent people from challenging classification of documents, because I mean, that's how a number of defendants have been able to escape Espionage Act charges. Like in Tom Drake's case, they found out that none of the documents he was charged with were actually classified at all. And then you have the huge overclassification program. After 9/11, there was a huge proliferation of national security and defense contractors. Became a very burgeoning industry, but so did the overclassification and secreting of information that should have never been closely held. And that created all sorts of opportunities for people to inadvertently or on purpose, depending on, you know, their what they were trying to accomplish, disclose stuff like, you look also at the double standard. I mean, General Petraeus shared black book information with his mistress and got a slap on the wrist. But by going after, you know, these lower level employees with the Espionage Act, they don't get any kind of sweetheart plea deal. They get, I mean, Reality Winner is serving the harshest sentence ever. And that was for one count. And she got a 63-month sentence. I mean, she's due to get out in November, but they have stolen her youth from her when she was just trying to do something, which was bring to light Russia's attempts to interfere in the election. And by the way, that dangerous document that was like so bad that she was accused of leaking, that ended up being made public by Robert Mueller, the special counsel in Russia investigation. So wait, the government makes public these documents, but then if you're, you know, a regular person who also tried to do that because you realized these documents had information that was that the public had a right to know about, you get hammered, you get nailed to the wall. And even if you're found not guilty, it still follows you for the rest of your life. And then if you are found guilty, it really follows you for many, many, many years and even decades afterwards.
So really the only way Reality Winner can put this all behind her and move on with her life like a normal person is to get a pardon from the President of the United States.
That is correct. That would be the easiest way for her to move on. I can't talk about her plea agreements specifically, but often the plea agreements in these cases bar you from talking about what you went through, from writing a book about what you went through, from getting any kind of money, you know, for being on the lecture circuit about what you went through. So you're really limited. Not that any whistleblowers are making bank on talking about like what happened to them, but that's how draconian this is. These plea agreements want to stifle your speech and your dissent forever. I think Reality is an enormously talented young woman who has an incredibly bright future ahead of her and will figure out ways to do what she had always been trying to do, which was make a difference in people's lives. And it's just a travesty of justice what happened to her on so many levels, but especially, I mean, Chelsea Manning had been given 35 years, but even, you know, President Obama realized that was excessive and commuted her sentence And so, yes, a pardon would be, that would be amazing if Joe Biden would do that. You know, my fingers are crossed, but I wish I could say I was optimistic, but I think there's kind of a cross, there's a bipartisan interest in going after leakers and making an example of them. And it's a way to kind of keep the national security state intact and to make an example of an employee outside of that rubric. I mean, the government is like, if you see something, say something to the public about, like, you know, a crime. But then when their own employees see something and say something, they end up facing life behind bars.
So Reality Winner saw something, said something, and paid a price, 63 months in prison.
That's exactly right. And Reality has medical vulnerabilities that have been written about publicly, including her eating disorder and, I believe, asthma, things that make her at an especially high risk for COVID. She was informing the Bureau of Prisons that this was the case. They knew that because they already had her in a medical section, but they already knew about all of this, and she still got COVID. Exactly like she said, I'm a very vulnerable person. But this is, again, the government exacting their pound of flesh and making an example out of her. And in a way, you know, her case is just such, again, like, it really is a travesty. She was just trying to do the right thing. No one got hurt. She was not convicted of a violent crime. She was convicted of a leak to a newspaper. That's how newspapers work. People leak to them. The government happens to be the biggest leaker in the United States. The government, you can read government leaks every single day in every single newspaper. But when a citizen leaks, especially if their leak reveals a government lie, they are hammered. You know, and again, it's to make an example out of them. In Reality's case, I would argue that backfired some because now there's, like, you know, an award-winning theater play about her. There is an amazing documentary that is just beginning to come out by Sonia Kennebec, who did National Bird, United States versus Reality Winner. And so, in a way, even when this stuff backfires and someone like Tom Drake is vindicated, or Reality is, you know, totally also vindicated in plays and movies and films and books about her, I don't know, the government, it doesn't seem to learn this lesson.
This is Friendly Fire, a voice for veterans. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Friendly Fire on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and on the web at gmcr.org. And now, back to Friendly Fire with Don Kimball.
And we're back with our guest, whistleblower and attorney, Jesslyn Raddick.
That when you try to make examples out of good people, I mean, Jeffrey Sterling's another example, also wrote a great book, also paid a tremendous price and is now speaking out about it. You know, and I think Daniel will be in the same category. You're kind of like making martyrs, but the government, I don't know, they seem to not factor that into their calculus because they're more concerned at pleasing their overseers in the national security and intelligence spheres. You know, they're more concerned about, like, keeping those people happy. And I think Obama, when he was elected, was seen to be strong on domestic issues, but weak when it came to national security and intelligence. So he was willing to kowtow to some of the, you know, those very powerful establishments. And this was one way to do it, by going after leakers.
All right, Justin, let's shift gears a little bit and talk about briefly what happened last year. There was a tremendous security breach that something came from either Russia or China called
SolarWinds.
SolarWinds. Yeah, the SolarWinds. That could be many, many, many times worse. So reality was really just kind of waving the flag. Hey, America, you're in danger of your election being tampered with by a foreign entity. Some people have said, well, America does that all the time. Well, okay, yes, but that still doesn't, two wrongs don't make a right. And reality, as you said, is becoming something of a folk hero in America as more and more people know of her plight. The play that you mentioned earlier, is this a room, the verbatim transcripts of 11 FBI agents coming to her house to arrest her, was off-Broadway play. The movie now, USA versus Reality winner, is really going to expose this true, again, travesty of justice. And the musician Kevin Conaway has written a song called My Reality. I don't know if you've heard it yet or not.
Yeah.
And seen the YouTube video where the artist Kim Kennedy paints reality's portrait in the background as the song's being performed. Absolutely fantastic stuff. And again, her name is becoming more and more known by people. You know, it's not going to do her much good unless President Biden pardons her. There's a coalition called Stand With Reality that has been working with her parents to get reality out of prison, out of the Carswell Federal Medical Center as soon as possible, because we feel that every day that she's in there is her life is in danger, because she's filed a charge against a prison guard there for sexual assault, and that guard has publicly stated that he would go for blood, and witnesses heard this. Reality has been in danger from COVID, and now she's in danger from a prison guard. But it's absolutely so frustrating that we cannot break through, because nobody wants to be associated with anybody who's been charged on the Espionage Act, whether it was justified or not. And of course, it wasn't justified that reality was charged under this. But, you know, the family has requested a meeting with Congressman
Philemon Vella Jr.
And the congressman has refused time and time again to even to a Zoom meeting to meet with reality's family. And the latest is that Vella's office is saying that because of ethics codes, they are prevented from getting involved in reality's case.
That's bull. I mean, there have been plenty of members of Congress who in different ways, especially Ron Wyden comes to mind, for example, in Snowden's case and Tom Drake's case, in terms of asking the government questions. In fact, I think he was the one who famously asked Clapper if we were spying on Americans. And Clapper said no, not wittingly, which was a total dodge.
Right. Not wittingly. Okay. Yeah.
So there are members of Congress. I mean, Dianne Feinstein has asked questions about earlier cases. And they also, I mean, particularly the ones on the Intelligence Committee, they can ask questions, including in closed session. If there's anything they're worried about the public hearing that might expose something, they can ask questions. So the idea that this cowardly congressman won't speaks more to him, because reality has a very meritorious case, and these congressmen are more concerned about kowtowing to the executive branch than they are about their own constituents.
So, Jess, do you think this is coming from above down to Vella's office, that he should not cooperate, or is it just Vella's just...
It's hard to tell if it's like his own sycophantic reasons as a politician. I have no doubt that, you know, to the extent he would raise concerns, yeah, I'm sure there are pressures from above that you don't want to go there. Like I said, the main congressman who has been willing to go there is Ron Wyden, and he does have, you know, a lot more power. and has been in Congress for a longer period of time and has more gravitas to do that. But again, if you're supposed to be serving your constituents, I mean, the guy could easily send a letter asking a few questions. I mean, it's not like he raised it on the floor of Congress. I mean, there are a million things. In my own case, Senator Ted Kennedy literally sent a letter to the Justice Department. I've had other congressmen do that on behalf of other clients or ask a question during someone's confirmation hearing. Senator Ted Kennedy was like, during Chertoff's confirmation, was like, I'm very concerned about this Rate Act situation. Why are you doing this to her? And Chertoff was like, I'll have to get back to you on that. And you could see him squirming. That kind of thing is important. It's not like you have to necessarily give a speech from the well of Congress. Just if you pointed questions during someone's confirmation hearing would help. Or even if you written questions, that don't even have to be, that are not public. So it's very cowardly for an elected representative to ignore the concerns, the very valid concerns of Senator, a constituent.
Senator Kennedy said in a Senate hearing defending you, Jess, that you were fired, in effect, for providing legal advice on a matter involving ethical duties and civil liberties that higher level officials at the DOJ disagreed with.
Yes.
He came to your defense, and elected officials should be coming to reality's defense. Tammy Duckworth's office has refused to, not, I don't know if the word's intervene or not, but to take a look at reality's case. Nobody right. wants to touch anything to do with anybody who's been charged under the Espionage Act. Let's talk about Hale and what's happening with his case.
Yes, Daniel Hale was charged with multiple counts under the Espionage Act for allegedly providing classified information to the journalist Jeremy Scahill of The Intercept. And there are many weird things about this case, but one was that this case, I mean, Daniel's house was searched in 2014, but then there was zero activity in this case. I was one of the lawyers on it. Zero activity in the case, nothing for 5 years. I mean, we, all the attorneys, thought it was dead on the vine. And then suddenly it gets resurrected in 2019. And the reason reality's case and Daniel, the reason these cases get resurrected is because Donald Trump didn't like leaks, and his attorney general, Jeff Sessions, said, we're going to aggressively go after leakers, and we have dozens of open leak investigations. And in Daniel's case, it appeared they dusted off a moldy oldie leak investigation that the Holder Justice Department decided not to prosecute and decided to file charges in that. Again, a travesty on so many levels, because what Daniel blew the whistle on was government lies about civilian casualty rates, about targeting the wrong people, about inaccurate targeting, and this whole time the drone program is being marketed as like this shiny new object for the military. You can avoid having boots on the ground, and it has precision, precision signature drone strikes, and it has this new level of accuracy, and all of that stuff was not true. And even Americans had been targeted for drone strikes, including a father, an American father, and his innocent 16-year-old son. I mean,
and these were separate. They were separate attacks, right? His 16-year-old son was sitting out with his friends out having a sip of coffee one day, and here comes a Hellfire missile, and he was killed by Americans only because his dad was accused of being a terrorist. I mean, this is just Orwellian, unjust. This is not the America that we were grew up in or believed to be doing the right thing. We're absolutely, it's an assassination program. And like you say, Daniel Hale, who was part of the drone program, United States Air Force veteran who was deployed to Afghanistan and who worked in the drone program, finally had enough, went to Jeremy Scahill in 2013 while he was still in the Air Force and started to reveal, you know, Daniel has, he cannot use a public interest as a defense. He pleaded guilty last March 31st, charged under the Espionage Act. He's to be sentenced on July 13th. What's his status right now, Jesslyn?
Right now, he is released on his own recognizance, as he has been this whole time. He lived with our family for a period of time. A number of people across a broad array of military, attorneys, friends, people in the intelligence community. So many people are writing letters of support for him right now for his pre-sentencing report. You know, again, he is just an amazing human being. Seriously, one of the smartest, most thoughtful, compassionate people I've had the privilege to know, and the honor to be a part of this horrible odyssey that he's been on. But he has had this sword of Damocles hanging over his head for years. Obviously, he hasn't committed espionage. It's not like he's like running around the world spilling secrets, has no history of prior criminal record. I mean, it's just such a tragedy. And I hope and pray that, you know, the judge will see all the amazing potential Daniel has to be just a very productive and peaceful member of the public and citizen. And, you know, we'll take that into account, that this man chose his conscience over his career and risked his very freedom because he felt that strongly that what the government was doing was immoral, unethical, and at times illegal. This is what we want our folks from the military to do. It is not a surprise to me that Daniel and Reality and a number of other whistleblowers, like you mentioned, Lisa Ling, are all from the drone program. I mean, it's, there are such a, I represent about a dozen whistleblowers who were part of the drone program, who were all complaining about different aspects of it, because this is a seriously flawed program that's run by, you know, secretive, you know, JSOC, Joint Special Operations Command, run in part by the CIA. I mean, run in part by, I mean, it's just wild the amount of power this program has. They can go and drop a Hellfire missile on an American. They get to play prosecutor, judge, jury, and executioner of anyone on the planet, but then they're going to burn the whistleblower who complains about that.
General Soleimani of Iran was assassinated a while back, along with, I believe, 9 other individuals by a U.S. drone when he was in Iraq. And this is an assassination program. We are not at war with Iran. This is a top general from Iran that's been assassinated by the United States. The program is completely out of control. And unfortunately, just speaking about the technology, Jess, is really frightening what's on the horizon. And what's already been done, the Houthi rebels supposedly made drones from 3D printers when they attacked the Saudi Arabian refineries. Israel has a suicide drone. They're talking about possibly they being the United States, talking about possibly arming drones with nuclear weapons. And now you have swarm drones, which had encircled some U.S. Navy ships off the coast of Southern California, and they still haven't figured out who that was. So swarm drones, suicide drones, drones made from 3D printers, and then perhaps the worst of all, autonomous drones, taking out the human factor, letting a drone decide who lives, who dies.
Right. It was already, you know, a program that was very compartmentalized. So to kind of spread the guilt, basically, different people would do different stuff and didn't necessarily have contact with each other. One person's just watching images all day. Another person does the target. Another person pushes a button, and all these people are compartmentalized. So it was already like a diffusion of responsibility. But taking people out of the equation entirely, I mean, in a way, I'm like, good, because every single one of them ends up with PTSD because of their moral guilt and anguish over this technology being used the way it's being used. But at the same time, I mean, this is just basically having killer robots in the sky. Now, drones can have a lot of good uses and humanitarian uses, like delivering food. But unfortunately, armed drones have proliferated. And unfortunately, despite all of our efforts over the last 5+ years to bring about awareness about them, appear to be here to stay. And it's like, now a fun toy, buy your own drone. You too can have your own drone in your backyard. I mean, it's just, you know, it's not fun and games. These are real lives that are just going up with zero due process, no declaration of war. Half the time you're just in the wrong place at the wrong time and happen to have brown skin. So,
and there's many people who are against it. Voices are small, but being heard. Code Pink just concluded a week of nonviolent civil disobedience and protests outside Creech Air Force Base, just north of Nevada this past week. Creech Air Force Base, of course, is the quote-unquote belly of the beast for armed drone operations conducted by the United States, where the drone pilots actually go to work in their flight suits and sit in front of a TV watching for 12-hour shifts. One person said, well, we may be
5,000 miles
away from the target, but we're also just 18 inches from them while they're looking at the scope. And like you said, the post-traumatic stress disorder is proliferating among these drone pilots and technicians. There is also a play called Grounded. It's a one-person play about a woman F-16 pilot who became pregnant, and of course in the third trimester, as is standard operating procedure, she was grounded. When she went to go back to flying her F-16, her commander told her, you're not going to fly an F-16 anymore, you're going to fly a drone. And the play is about her struggles driving to work every day to Creech Air Force Base, perhaps being involved in an assassination of somebody, and coming home and making dinner for her husband and her children just like nothing had happened. A one-person play called Grounded. I don't know where that play is, but if you get a chance to see it, it's truly, truly powerful. Our guest today, Jesslyn Radick. She is a national security and human rights attorney from Washington, D.C. She's the director of national security and human rights at Expose Facts, Whistleblower and Source Protection Program. She is going to be representing Daniel Hale, or is representing Daniel Hale, United States Air Force veteran whistleblower who pled guilty in March of this year to one count of violating the Antiquated and Weaponized Espionage Act of 1917. His sentence is coming up on July 13th. Just what can people do to support not just Daniel Hale, but Reality L. Winner and all whistleblowers, and let the government know this is wrong?
There are a number of petitions that are circulating. I believe Roots Action has a petition right now. There are also, I mean, Daniel Hale is on Twitter. I believe his handle is at God is a Cop on Twitter. Reality's mother and sister and advocate Wendy Muir, they're also on Twitter and do regular updates. So follow these people on Twitter and, you know, write to them in prison. For the people who are in prison already, write to them. You know, and talk about their cases, exactly what you're doing. Talk about this. Say Reality's name. Say her name. Talk about her case, you know, and talk about what's going on with Daniel. These are young people who, of their own volition, enlisted in the Air Force to serve their country and got caught up in something that appears to be an extra-legal, extrajudicial program. And, you know, blew whistles on it. Same on election interference, same on secret surveillance. Our country's biggest scandals of this century, the people who revealed those scandals are the ones who got prosecuted for espionage. You can look at, you know, our organization and any organization supporting whistleblowers. We operate on a shoestring budget. We do these cases entirely pro bono. So I just be involved, like get involved, whether it's a protest, whether it's writing a letter, whether it's just speaking out or saying, you know, there's a whole shop that sells Reality Winners beautiful drawings, and she's a very gifted artist, and a very social,
gifted, yeah.
Yeah, and a huge social justice conscience infuses the work that she does. I mean, she's an amazing human. So is Daniel Hale. Support their families and support them. I mean, Daniel has his voice on Twitter right now. And I hope while he's in prison, like with Chelsea Manning, was able to have someone tweet for her while she was incarcerated. I hope maybe Daniel might be able to do the same thing. John Kiriakou wrote letters during his incarceration that he later turned into a book. So whistleblowers have been able to still find their voice despite every effort by the government to silence them. But if the public supports them and their families, that's something tangential that people can do.
Thank you, Jess, for the work that you're doing. And of course, the pandemic has made the work, everybody's life and everybody's work, that much more difficult. You also have MS, and how does that factor into what you're able to do or not do in this very, very stressful pandemic and in work that must be tremendously stressful also?
Yeah, and stress exacerbates multiple sclerosis, so it's something I've had since I was 19, and luckily, unlike when I was diagnosed, eventually there have been a number of medications that can't cure it, but can be used to treat it and keep it in check, which I'm grateful for, and I've been able to take those, you know, have those treatments. But in terms of coronavirus, yeah, I have been probably on lockdown more than I was among the very first people a year ago, literally living, you know, out of, you know, the bedrooms in my house because of being immunocompromised, having a higher risk than most people. It's terrifying. But then again, because of my MS, I've had to be isolated before when immunosuppressed. I've had to deal with like very weird restrictions. In a way, it kind of prepped me mentally for being able to deal with, you know, having to be in isolation, having to, you know, be cautious, wear a mask, not be able to do, you know, be like super vigilant when in public places, that kind of thing. But yeah, it does, you know, it does complicate work. I get more fatigued easily. I, you know, I've been doing work, you know, and someone's like, oh, I saw her like giving herself a shot. She's like a drug dealer. I mean, I've had to deal with all sorts of like ridiculous rumors that, you know, have nothing to, you know, I'm like, no, this is a prescribed medication. It's not me shooting up some illegal drug. But again, the government doesn't care about starting rumors like that. So it's just kind of a complicating factor, but one that I'm used to dealing with. I have learned to live with it and work around it the best I can. I think most clients are like, oh yeah, I totally forgot you have that. And that's like a benefit and a curse. Like, you can look really well on the outside and just be feeling ridiculously tired or having tremors, or, you know, I can only partially see, you know, there are a lot of invisible disabilities that go along with MS. And then people are like, oh yeah, her gait is weird. Or, oh yeah, you know, she seems to have trouble saying certain words or things like that. And, you know, I'm like, I don't feel the obligation to give you an entire tutorial on MS, but other people can be very cruel. Like when they don't know I have MS, there are all sorts of things, accommodations I use to be able to do my job. And people are like, oh yeah, I forgot you had MS. Or,
really appreciate you sharing some of the struggles that you go through with this. And people need to be educated about it and need to learn about it. And I really hope the best for you and your family. You're truly a hero to a lot of people out there, defending heroes like Daniel Hale. So keep up the great work. And we'll follow the case very closely. Thanks again for coming on Friendly Fire, Jess.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
And we hope you enjoyed today's show with whistleblower and former Department of Justice attorney Jesselyn Raddick, who now represents whistleblowers such as United States Air Force veteran Daniel Hale. For more information on how you can help Hale's case, contact CodePink at codepink.org. And to help whistleblower Reality L. Winner, who's serving a 63-month term in the Carswell Federal Medical Center, go to standwithreality.org. Well, that's going to be a wrap here from the Sacred Feather Studios. Special thanks to Ken Kepler. As always, everybody, stay safe, be well, and until next week, peace.